this week on The Inswinger.
Can we even afford to sack another manager? And what he did do last season, I liked a lot of, and I praised him before on the podcast. But you can't ignore the problems in this team.
I don't think they're any closer to winning a trophy than they were last year. I mean, some of the players they brought in are questionable.
I think tactical versatility, of course, Arteta has his philosophy, works to their advantage.
They've changed the guard and they've brought in a whole new era of Galacticos and they look as potent as ever.
Welcome back to The Inswinger Season 4, Episode 2. I'm Charlie DiMatteo, joined alongside
Harrison McGlashan.
Another tough one for Harrison's boys. We'll get into that. We'll get into some North London derby recap. Liverpool, first real stumbling block under Arne Slot this weekend in the Premier League. We've also got the return of Champions League football, which we'll get into. There's a whole new format, lots of new, more games, hopefully some more entertaining games in this league phase. Gone are the days of the group stage games. So we'll get into all that, but let's start in North London. Big game early in the season. These North London derbies always seem to fall somewhat early in the season. Set the tone for the rest of the year. Ange's men, a bit of a shaky start to the year so far. Pressure was on them at home. Arsenal were without their arguably two best players, Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard. They came away with the win, though, thanks to a set piece, which we're seeing more and more often from this Mikel Arteta team. What was your biggest takeaway, you know, from the game? Was it the result, performance from either team, you know, press right reaction? What did you make of it?
I think the resilience of Arsenal is something to point out here. I thought they were outstanding defensively, which is no surprise. They were obviously the best defensive team in the league last season, looked to be that as well this season. And listen, they just got the job done. I don't think they're afraid of surrendering possession, soaking up pressure and protecting a lead. They seem very good at that. And just being confident in being able to score goals from different areas. And today, and the other day, it was Gabriel off a corner. So they can beat you in so many ways. They don't have one set way of playing for every game, which I like. I think a little bit of tactical versatility. Of course, Arteta has his philosophy. But I think that works to their advantage, and we can sort of compare that to the other side in Spurs, who seem very rigid in what they want to do. So I think, yeah, listen, Arsenal, of course, without their two best midfielders in Rice and Odegaard, all they needed was a win. I think they needed the momentum, obviously slipped up against Brighton. You know, so I think this was just a get over the line however way you can against a rival. Form goes out the window, just beat them away from home as well. And they did that. So huge momentum boost for them, albeit very early in the season. Again, a slightly different shape. Trossard playing centrally. Again, no Rice, no Odegaard. All they needed to do was get the job done, and they did that. And then you look at the other side of thing with Spurs, and you're saying, I think we can get at them. They don't have those two players. And they didn't. They just seemed to lack a bit of bite when it mattered most in attack. And listen, Solanke will be criticized a bit. I think Ange, of course, where we were talking about off air, is coming under some criticism for his persistence to play this way. And listen, Arsenal are a great team, but I think that game, I think Spurs could have gotten a result in that game with the amount of the ball they had. The momentum in some of the game, you know, some parts of the game was with them, especially at home. And they just couldn't put the ball in the net. And you know, Arsenal are going to create a chance, right? So I think you have to take your chances if you're the other team. So they didn't do that. I don't think it's quite panic stations yet for them. It's so early in the season. But I think there is some cause for concern with Spurs.
I think with Spurs, they're kind of at a crossroads in that you had one great, what started out great and kind of tailed off season under Ange, and he's come out and said, you know, my second season I win things. And, you know, for Spurs fans, yeah, sure, see it to believe it, buddy. And I think you're starting to see the fans not turn on Ange, and some of this can be outside criticism, but there comes a point where style of play and philosophy has to meet results. And they got results for a lot of last year, but for the last few months they haven't been getting results. And the crossroads I'm referring to is, okay, when does Ange tweak his system or not? It leaning towards not changing his system, because I don't think they're any closer to winning a trophy than they were last year. I mean, some of the players they brought in are questionable, I think. Odegaard, is he really going to win Spurs a trophy? I don't know. players like that. Slanky, I think, is a good signing. We talked about that last week, but I think decisions need to be made for Ange because I think pretty quickly he might lose the Spurs fan base, which is not a recipe for success. On the Arsenal side of things, it's another sign of how far they've come under Arteta. When you look at the collapse in, I'm thinking of, you know, two or three seasons ago, late in the year when they fell to Spurs and to Newcastle, cost them the Champions League, the steps they've taken to mature as a team in these big games, and like you said, just find a way to win is I think, telling. And that's twice this year already. Fixture list has not been kind. I feel like they've got City coming up either next week or the week after, too. To go on the road, 1-0 win against Villa. 1-0 win. Or was it 1-0? I'm not sure. They beat Villa on the road. 1-0 win against Spurs in the North London Derby at Spurs. Two huge wins that I think will do a lot for their confidence. And we know that. But I want to touch on Ange for just another second. There's been, you know, outside media criticism I've seen, you know, Rory Jennings as usual touting his, you know, big bombastic claims. But I mean, what's the expectation for Ange this year? Because you saw great football, but you didn't get the Champions League. This year, you feel like the natural progression is like, all right, well, we've seen what you can do, and at your best, you can be up there. Is expectation Champions League football? What's the expectation there?
I mean, I think without that comment that you mentioned, we're thinking about this slightly differently, right? For me, I would say any progression is good progression. Yes, they should be challenging for Champions League. Probably should be getting that fourth spot. But when I look at their business, I think they had a good window. I'll stick by that. But I think their window set them up better for the long run than the short term with, you know, Archie Gray and Bergvall and all these guys. I think you hit it spot on. They're not going to get you a trophy or something like that immediately. So I think the Spurs fans will be patient, but I think you're onto something with the media here sort of jumping to conclusions and getting a little antsy in his press conferences as well, a little bit, you know, he likes to throw the odd jab at a reporter, you know, he's a bit sneaky in that way. So I think that'll ruffle a few feathers, but I would think that inside the Spurs camp, little has changed. We're backing this guy.
Yeah.
We like the way he plays. We've done good business, but pump the brakes, people. We're not, I don't think, going to win a league, a Champions League. Even, I mean, they should be challenging for cups. I think a lot of teams should be challenging for cups because just the nature of those competitions. But in terms of the big ones, they're a long way off. And I think they know that. And the business they've done isn't going to propel them up there immediately. So that's my stance. I wouldn't be, like I said, jumping to conclusions about Ange and you know, this sort of the locker room and things going the wrong way. I think the Spurs higher ups will look at this and say, we're not over that hump yet. And, you know, I think there is something to be said about the way he sort of conducts himself in these press conferences and sort of the frustration he has shown with the club and with the supporters mentality-wise. And maybe he's onto something there. But listen, they have a long way to go. But I think they should still be and are very capable of challenging for Champions League football. I had them fourth in my preseason predictions video. I think there's no reason why.
Check it out on YouTube.
I think there's no reason why they still can't do that with the squad they've got.
I think they're in a weird spot because, like you brought up, when Ange comes out and says, you know, I expect to win things in my second year, it whether he means it or not, it brings a sort of pressure, added pressure to the team, to the club. There's a different vibe around the club. But at the same time, I look at the football they played last year, and it's up there with some of the best in the league. I mean, it rivals, not stylistically in comparison to City, but you look at how good Arsenal have been and how dynamic they've been in attack. Spurs were just as good for large parts of last season. And, like, Ange Ball in full effect was brilliant to watch. It was brutally effective for the most part. You know, there were some games where they had a defensive mishap or they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. But, like, the chances were there. I remember one so vividly. Like, West Ham went to White Hart Lane or Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And we, for the first 20 minutes, we were pinned down. Went 1-0 down. Looked, we didn't have a kick in our half. Spurs missed three or four chances in that first half to kill the game off. And we came back and scored a couple fluky goals and won 2-1. And that's what I'm talking about. Those are the games that, you know, comparing this Spurs team to Arsenal, perhaps, that Arsenal have eliminated. They've won those games. Or you want to look at the transition Klopp's Liverpool teams made when they went from, you know, challengers to legit title contenders. Those are the games you have to win. I think that's where I'm at with Spurs. Can they make that leap? I don't know. It remains to be seen. That's Ange's challenge for this year. Moving on, though, to another potential Champions League contender, a team that's in the Champions League this year, Villa. Came from two goals behind to beat your boys Everton. Villa, I mean, encouraging stuff. You're getting Ollie Watkins scoring goals. John Duran scored again, to my dismay. One that got away with West Ham. That's just killing me week by week. But for an Everton perspective, unfortunately, it's deja vu. And I texted you. I turned the game on at 2-0. I was like, what's going on? And you're like, we've seen this before. And lo and behold, what you feared became the outcome. And it's again the matter of, you know, maybe not what we're expecting under Sean Dyche, getting the goals, but not being able to keep them out. So it's not a recipe for success. It's just deja vu. What was your take on the game?
Yeah, very frustrating. Different to the week before in that Villa, of course, are a better team. And, you know, they probably did deserve a result. They created a lot of chances. I think for Everton, it's you have to look at the back line and a lot of question marks there. And I said last week, if there's anyone who should be able to solve this problem, it should be Sean Dyche. But I think another thing I said last week, and I'll hammer it home again, I think Branthwaite just brings a different element. And I didn't realize that we were this reliant on him, but it appears we are. And when you look at the squad on paper, you kind of think, well, yeah, maybe you have to be, because we know Ashley Young is a liability. He picks up a card every game. He's giving away penalties. He's in his late 30s. It's just not who you want to be playing in a fullback position. Seamus Coleman, slightly more reliable, but never fit. Nathan Patterson, never fit. Mikalenko is quite steady, but, you know, struggles going forward. And then Michael Keane, right, who is just a problem. I think he can have a steady performance, but he never goes above. He just doesn't do anywhere near what Branthwaite does. And when you look at the numbers, we concede more goals when he plays. So right. That's the way I'm looking at it. And I'm disappointed that Dyche hasn't been able to, you know, just install something in the meantime while Branthwaite recovers that can keep us keeping some clean sheets. Mm-hmm. And just we look more easy to play through. Villa went down around the outside way too many times for my liking and just got in behind us. So I know there's a lack of pace there. But, yeah, it definitely is concerning. I mean, even Tarkowski has been fine, but just looks so much better when Branthwaite plays next to him. So I think I'd still be, I think I'd give Dyche probably the next two games to really sort it out, and I think they will do that just because of the finances and can we even afford to sack another manager and what he did do last season. I liked a lot of, and I've praised him before on the podcast, but you can't ignore the problems in this team. Even in midfield, we look a bit easy to play through. Does he have to hone in Iribunim a little bit and just say, hey, guys, let's manage the game here. We're 2-0 up. I don't know. But I think there need to be some tactical tweaks made, and that is on the manager. We've seen some really good individual performances in attack. I thought McNeil looked great in this new role as a 10. Calvert-Lewin actually had a really good game against Villa. Ndai had a great game against Bournemouth, a little bit more quiet, but happy that he's playing. I thought Jack Harrison did pretty well in the first half. So less worried about the attack, which I couldn't really say last season. So I'm holding on to this idea that we can do it, because we saw it last season how strong we were defensively. So that has to come back. The players are there. Barb Branthwaite, who's coming back. So it can't be that simple that he's just lost all ideas and we can't defend anymore. It can't just be that simple. That's where I'm looking at it. But maybe I'm wrong. So I listen, Leicester away at the weekend, Palace at home the week later. You win those two games, you're right back up the table. Because, you know, we're of course, haven't picked up a point yet, but, you know.
Still so early.
You win a game and you're in, 16th. So anything can change. I understand the fans' frustration. I'm frustrated with the goals we're leaking. But listen, Villa are a good team. Yes, we, sat back and they were all over us. But we looked dangerous on the counterattack. We're scoring a few more goals. We got our set-piece goal. There's still elements to this team that do work, but I think we need Branthwaite back, and I hate to say that because I thought Dyche was going to be able to get a tune out of this back line. But this back line is struggling. That's the bottom line. So something needs to change there. And I don't think it's just personnel-wise. I think he needs to just tighten us up a little bit. Go back to basics. Make us hard to beat, and let's go from there. We've got a few more pieces in attack that might be able to hurt teams. So big, big game this weekend.
Yeah, and it's hard to pin it all on Branthwaite, but it's kind of a logical conclusion. I mean, he was brilliant last year. He was, you know, sought after by United. Some other teams were sniffing around. He's a brilliant defender. But yeah, like you said, it's hard to not want a little bit more out of Dyche organizing his defense without him. Because if you're that reliant on one player, it's not, it tells more about, you know, the overall picture. Going on to Villa, though, I want to talk about one thing. I do want to touch on John Duran. It's fascinating, this guy. Came over from MLS, Chicago Fire, was on the brink of a move to West Ham this summer. He was throwing up the irons on Instagram Live, looked desperate to get out of Birmingham, wanted the big lights of London, and he's just come back. And, I mean, his goals to minutes to goal ratio is nuts.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy the amount of goals he scores in such a limited time and the catalog of goals he scores. I mean, I guess my question here is, what did they do with him? Because you have Ollie Watkins, who was scoring goals for England at the Euros and one of the best players in the league last year. And you've also got Durant. I mean, do they play two up front? Is he just the ultimate super sub? I think they wanted to cash in on him, but West Ham wouldn't stump up the money or other teams. Yeah. So what do they do?
Well, they're entitled to ask for a big fee because I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you keep doing what you're doing. And you've got Champions League football, so maybe you give him the odd game there. I don't know if he's playing tonight against Young Boys. But, I mean, listen, I think don't fix what's not broken. If he's happy to come off the bench and score your screamers and, you know, get involved and win games for you, then you do that. And you give Watkins a break every once in a while, which I'm sure he'll need because they're playing Champions League football. So you're buzzing if you're Unai Emery. It's a great problem to have, a backup striker who is that prolific in front of goal. And you know what? If he gets restless, then you cash in. And there's no problem with that. And you get a big fee and you move on and you get someone else. That's how this business works. So I am shocked he's still there because I think he deserves to be starting in this league. But listen, if nobody's going to pay, then fair enough. But I think there will be suitors now, especially start of the season in maybe January or you know, at least this summer, because boy oh boy, he is a handful.
Yeah, West Ham, I believe our final bid was 35 plus like 5 or 10 in add-ons, and they wanted I think closer to 40 plus add-ons, and we wouldn't budge, and we're looking like idiots right now because I don't think you're getting them for less than
40 is
70 now.
40 would have been a good deal.
So that's what they're looking at. They're in a real nice spot. Moving on to the last game we're going to recap in the Prem. Liverpool, who we spoke about pretty positively last week on our, you know, transfer review and opening of the season review. First real hiccup under Arnie Slot at home to Forest. Lost 1-0. Signs of life for Forest, maybe. Is this a bigger concern for Liverpool? I mean, it's kind of just the first defeat. You never like to lose at Anfield, though. That's a pretty pristine record they've got there. You know, they think Forest at home with the way they've been playing, they were expecting these 3 points, didn't get it. Does that say more about Liverpool or Forest at this stage?
You know, I didn't read into this result too much. It's a Hudson-Odoi special, you know. It was such, and I've always liked him, but he is a one-trick pony and he's damn good at it, man. Every time I watch like a Forest highlight that he's involved in, it's that goal, you know. So nothing really to get too excited about if you're Forest. Because, I mean, you've got that player there. That's great. But you knew you had that player. You know, for Liverpool, again, it's, I didn't expect brilliant, brilliant things from them this season anyway. So I think the odd hiccup here and there will happen. It's a new coach. It's a new style, new system, etc. So I'm not too, I know, you know, we want to sort of, you know, romanticize these results sometimes, but early in the season, I'm pumping the brakes on both of these teams. Really, I'm not flipping my stance on Nuno. I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And Arne Slot, you know, again, I think it's going to take time to really get this Liverpool team going. I think they still look fine. Yeah, they're really strong at Anfield. But, you know, I remember a couple of seasons ago they lost against Leeds and Newcastle, I think, at Anfield. So, you know, these results can happen. I'm really not too bothered for either team, but a fun result, you know, to see. Yeah. I mean, I think we want this in the Premier League from like a bigger picture standpoint, right? This is good.
I mean, you look at the City game. I agree with you on both those for both teams. If you look at the City game, I mean, they go 1-0 down inside 30 seconds at home to Brentford, and then we all kind of felt like it was inevitable that they'd come back and win, and they did. Haaland scored 2 goals. I think he's on pace for like 97 goals this year, with 9 goals or whatever it is through 4 games. But you bring up a good point, and you know, we want more interesting upsets, and this was that. Again, I'm with you. I'm not overturning my take on Nuno. However, I think it's a reminder of the talent that Forest do have in going forward. I think this time last year, we were all kind of like, you know, Elanga, Hudson-Odoi, these guys. Yeah. And then it didn't really pan out, and they got dangerously close to the drop last year and snuck away. So maybe something changes, maybe not. But we're going to move on to talk some Champions League. I want to go through some of the big teams, some of the big names that we know are going to be up there come the end of the season. We've got this new format with the league phase, 36 teams. No more group stages. We got some games going on now, but you've got teams in there who we expect to be there come, you know, late in the tournament. You've got your Real Madrids, your Cities, perhaps a younger, less Mbappe-focused PSG could be around there. I mean, I'll start. I think City and Madrid, again, are the favorites. I think Madrid now than ever, now more than ever, with the addition of Kylian Mbappe, are, you know, the Champions League is their bread and butter. And when you think of Real Madrid, you think of the Champions League. They've won it, I think, 12 or 13 times now. Kylian Mbappe, one of the most talented, if not the most talented player in the world, alongside Vinny and Rodrigo and Bellingham. And they've changed the guard, and they've brought in a whole new era of Galacticos, and they look, you know, as potent as ever. So in the Champions League, it's not always about grinding out a performance, which, you know, tends to suit the likes of Man City in the Premier League. But we saw City, they didn't get it done in the Champions League last year on penalties. They lost to Madrid. Madrid had that, I'm going to speak French here, I know they're from Spain, that je ne sais quoi, that just something else in the Champions League works for them. So I think with Mbappe, they are a dangerous, dangerous team. I'm stating the obvious here, to win it all this year in the Champions League. Do you have another favorite? Maze at Man City is a PSG, or perhaps a dark horse?
I'll give you a dark horse, maybe not to win it, but I have to say, Barcelona, what a start to the season for them. Wasn't sold on Hansi Flick, didn't feel like a Barcelona man, but maybe that's what they need. Maybe they needed something a bit different. And I just like the team. Yamal is fun. Almo is fun. Yeah, they're kind of financially a mess, but boy, I mean, I feel like they bring a new wonder kid through every season. And maybe another season with sort of this core, you know, some familiar names we're seeing. Just maybe they have the right blend of experience and youth to maybe get to a semifinal. And they've started the season really well with 5 out of 5 in the league, smashing Valladolid 7-0 and Girona 4-1. So I just like that attack, Rafinha, Almo, Yamal. Lewandowski's a concern in terms of his age and fitness, but he can score goals. You've got a great goalkeeper in Ter Stegen, some solid players in the back line, Pedri in midfield. It's just a fun sort of team. Of course, there is controversy and question marks always at Barcelona. That's just the nature of the beast. But I don't know, maybe this is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction, but could this be a year? They're due for a run in the Champions League. Could this be the year maybe Hansi Flick, who has won the competition, could take them on a little bit of a run?
Yeah, I like that shout. And I think back to a couple years ago now, maybe 3 or 4, when, you know, Barca were just brutalized in the Champions. This was during COVID in the Champions League by Bayern. I think they lost 8-2 over two legs, something like that. And it was Flick, and it was Lewandowski. And yes, Lewandowski is not the Lewandowski of 2020 when he probably should have won the Ballon d'Or and they avoided it. But Hansi Flick's ideas and philosophy, I think, like you said, could be what Barca need, because Barca have always been about the flair and tiki-taka and La Masia and bringing these wonderful players like Pedri and Gavi. sometimes you just need a bit of bulk. You look at these guys that have played for Flick at Bayern. They're just big and strong. And there's, I'm not saying he's literally bulking up his players, which he might be, but there's a mentality side to that. I think that Flick will have a greater expectation on that side of the game than perhaps someone like Xavi, who played the game with flair and finesse and was not, you know, an all act, a business, you know, brutal midfielder. Who's a bit stronger. And I think Flick, like you said, could be, you know, that missing piece, perhaps. So I do like that shout. And I'm always rooting for Barcelona in the Champions League. I think there's a bit of romanticism there. Other dark horses, maybe. I'm looking. You know, PSV is an interesting one. They had a great year last year. They're getting cooked right now, currently by Juve. Juve, I'm not sure about them.
Yeah, what do we think of Juventus?
Juventus, we were talking about this before we came on air.
A lot of interesting business this summer. I think it's an interesting conversation to have.
Yeah, let's go into it. I mean, Juve post kind of Allegri the first time around, and Pirlo and Chiellini have just, they've been awful. They are a shadow of their former selves. If you look at the players they've brought in, there have been some interesting ones. I mean, what's your take on them right now? I mean, I'll give quickly, I just don't rate the club right now and how they're run. They're dealing with all sorts of financial issues, flip-flopping managers. Allegri's back. Now it's Thiago Motta. They brought in Pirlo. They had Ronaldo. They've just lost their way a bit. And as a result, Serie A has become a more competitive league because Juve had in a chokehold for a good few years there. But yeah, what's your stance on Juve currently?
I think it is probably the right move in the long run to ditch the, you know, dinosaur, if you will, tactics of Allegri and go for something a bit different, a bit more progressive in Thiago Motta. But he is a young manager, so I think the goal for them will be success in the league this season. Like you said, very competitive league. No reason they can't go on and win it. Midfield overhaul is interesting, but we were just saying before the pod, McKennie's still there, popping up with a goal. You know, but I like Coop Miners and Taram and these guys. So some of the business I'm okay with, but it seems like they're struggling to shift a few players. You always see links with McKennie to the Premier League and Wea and guys like that. So I think they're sort of in transition, trying to do a full-on overhaul, which I support. But they don't think they've quite managed to do that yet. You know, Szczesny is now out. So they've got a few pieces that I like. You know, Bremer and Gatti at the back, and, you know, some interesting midfielders. Locatelli seems like that Italian guy you need in there for the fan buy-in and, you know, build the team around. So, and Vlahovic is a little hit and miss, but I think he can definitely get you plenty of goals to win you a league. Chiesa is an interesting sale. I guess he just wasn't the right sort of profile, maybe character issues. I found that a bit odd given he's Italian and clearly very talented, but to sell for that fee screams just desperate to get him out the door. So I like Thiago Motta trying to sort of overhaul this team, but I don't think they're there yet. It's a little bit of PSG syndrome and just going in a totally different direction. Going to take us a few years to get there. We're going to sell our star or get rid of our star in PSG's case and try to do something different. I'd like to see, I mean, I don't think they're necessarily doing what PSG are doing in terms of like building an Italian only identity.
No, not
like,
many Italians in this
not
team.
Many Italians, which is a little odd. But Italian football's in a little bit of a weird spot. I wasn't really impressed with them at the Euros. They just don't have a very good team. I mean, like, to be honest. But yeah, I think I don't really expect much from them in the Champions League to get back to that. But it's just sort of an interesting topic and one to watch,
I think with Juve, what has happened is once they got that period of success, like Bayern in Germany and like PSG in France, they became the top dog in that food chain and were able to recruit seemingly, you know, as long as they wanted, but getting the best young players, the best players in the league, period, would make their way to Juve one way or another. What has happened is there have been a few of those transfers in recent years, like Chiesa, like Locatelli, perhaps, where they were the next step as that feeding clubs below them, but those players didn't pay off. And now what has happened is
the best players in the world, when they say, oh, okay, I'm looking for a move to Italy, they're not looking at Juve. And you get this just drop-off in quality. I mean, I'm just looking at the team. There is just a drop-off in quality. Whether you know, some of these players like you, I like. You know, I like Koop Miners. I like Conceição and Vlahovic. Vlahovic is another one who was like this big name who was going to come and become the next Haaland and just bag goals because he came from Fiorentina in Italy, in Serie A, and it just hasn't really paid off. And I feel like they had a formula that worked. It was, you know, quality players that have done it in Serie A, had Italian roots one way or another in the league or nationality, and they were able to build off that consistently. But now it's that once that got broken, they've struggled to reinvent themselves, like you're saying, and that they're going through that process now, which I think, like you said, is what PSG is also going through. So, yeah, like you said, interesting one to watch for Juve. Not sure how they'll fare in the Champions League. We'll keep our eye on the Champions League as things progress through this league phase. Still, you know, we're always waiting for the knockouts. That's when the good stuff really gets going. So until next time, thank you for listening.